The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we want to turn our attention to the forthcoming presidential campaign, where more candidates are beginning to emerge. Just yesterday, businessman Gareth Sheridan has thrown his hat into the ring, while Michael Flatley remained tight-lipped on a visit to Fla Ceolnaharan, where he played the flute. But in a rapidly changing political landscape, what really counts when it comes to the campaign? Is money a vital ingredient to succeed? And how important is personal image in the race for the Oras? Eoin O'Malley, Professor of Politics at Dublin City University, is with me, and Barry McLaughlin, Head of Client Engagement at the Communications Clinic, and they're going to attempt to answer these very relevant questions for certain people anyway. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Okay, Eoin, we'll talk to you first. Presidential campaigns, they can be colourful, but for good reason, because there's no power involved.
Yeah, there's not a lot to talk about apart from the person because they're not governing or doing anything like that. There's no point in talking about policy or not much point. No,
they
in
will
talking
talk about it, even
they,
though...
They will, but most people's focus is on the candidate themselves, and it's not on, say, their party label. It's about the candidate, whether this person is presidential or not. And so you then get deep into their past and deep into their history.
And do people kind of in their mind's eye conjure up the idea of that person may be making a speech, whether it's to Macron Afferma or to a foreign government?
Yes, I think that's what you're doing. Does this person look presidential? Would you be ashamed of this person, or would you be proud of this person on the world stage or just on the national stage? Is this the sort of person who could kind of stand up, make that speech, do it well? Are they articulate? And so you could see somebody like Mary McAleese, who nobody had really heard of, but was incredibly articulate and so was able to become the most presidential of the lot in her campaign in 97.
So then I have to ask you, Barry, the question of name recognition, face recognition. How important is that?
Yeah, it is. And just come back on the point that Eoin made there about Mary McAleese. I mean, Mary McAleese came at a very interesting time. It was just, remember, the Labour Party just came in the UK. There was a huge push for a peace process. And actually, she campaigned very strongly on being that bridge. So she had that, even though people didn't know her, people could very quickly associate with the idea of what she was hoping to do and what she would try and influence
She was an academic, but she wasn't completely unknown because she had done a lot on television with Today Tonight, the current affairs programme in RTE. So she wasn't a complete unknown.
Yeah. But I think for a lot of young people maybe who were maybe voting for the first time, and I remember myself, I was voting for the first time in that presidential election. I didn't know who she was, but very quickly I could see what she was saying in terms of this bridge between North and South. We had this kind of very young peace process. But we were just chatting in the, just while we're waiting, myself and Eoin. And if you could say the last election, six candidates ran. Four of them were nominated by local authorities. I would say two of those candidates were pretty well known. Sean Gallagher being one of them. He was quite well known. And Peter Casey. Peter Casey had built up an image and a reputation as a businessman. Sean Gallagher the same. And Sean Gallagher had been involved in a political party as well.
As I know well.
As you know well. I think you were in the room that particular time, Pat. But the name recognition is very important. And I suppose this relates then back to how much resources political parties have to put in. If you have to spend a lot of time explaining to people who this person is, you're not actually campaigning. You have to explain, well, I don't know who this person is. I don't know them from Adam. What do they do? What are they involved in? Mm. And at the end of the day, if you're not talking about, look, what this person stands for, what's important, how they connect with people, I will always make the view that the best campaigns are the ones where the candidate gets to meet as many people as possible that you can say, did you meet the candidate? No, but I met somebody who did and I found them very impressive.
Mm. So if you're spending too much of your time just explaining who, introducing yourself, for example, via posters on the poll or something like that, you're at a disadvantage to the person who already has name and face recognition.
You're at a disadvantage. But again, if you have a good campaign where you're very clear on what is a consistency we have. And I mean, there's a lot of figures that were floating around recently about how much people spent during general election campaigns and on social media and things like that. But ultimately, if you're telling people one thing on social media and they're hearing something else, say, on a radio interview with you or when they meet someone face to face, that campaign is not going to work very well because people go, well, what do you stand for? What is it that you're talking about? What is it you believe in? So a lot of planning in that, in terms of what is it I want the ordinary person listening to go, is it that I want them to be proud of me? Is it that I want to get a sense, right, this person would represent the country well, but most importantly, understands the job. And there's just one point I'd make on this. There's a couple of candidates who are already complaining about we're not getting in the door here. Mm. Now, I would worry about any candidate who is already complaining about the restrictions around getting in, because being president is one of the most restrictive jobs you can have. You can't leave the country, you can't set policy, you have to run everything through different people. And if there's candidates out there already complaining about the rules or threatening, as we hear with Conor McGregor, to take legal action, you have to wonder how they'd function in the job.
Owen, talk to me about the importance or not of a party backing.
It's probably less important now than it was in the past. So in the past, you know, people were voting. You were a Fine Gael or a Fianna Fáiler and you tended to back your man. It usually was a man. Now, I think for most of them, because the parties don't have this big chunk of 40 or 50% of the vote behind them, having a party label behind you is probably a disadvantage.
Is it also down to Mary Robinson, who kind of changed the mould, you know, a man in a suit?
Yes, so she completely changed it. She came in, she had a new narrative about what the presidency would be. And I think a narrative is an important thing, because if you look at Mary McAleese, then she had this narrative of, you know, bridging north and south. And so the party label is really something that helps you get on the ballot paper. But after that, I think most of them wouldn't want to.
People might forget that Mary Robinson was the Labour candidate, and equally with Michael D. Higgins.
Yeah, I mean, and Mary Robinson had a pretty troubled relationship with the Labour Party. She was kind of in and out of it, and she resigned from the Labour Party at time as well. And her relationship with Dick Spring, the Labour leader, wasn't very strong or close, and they could be tetchy with each other. And so that party backing was helpful for her to get on the ballot paper, but she quickly kind of moved away from the party. And I think anybody will. I won't expect Mairead McGuinness, for instance, to be emphasising that she's the Fine Gael candidate.
Yeah, we wonder. The European credentials maybe. But again, having had all that power and influence in Europe, then to become president without any of that. I suppose influence is all you can have in terms of shaping public opinion a little bit by making the kind of speech that you might be allowed now in the wake of Michael D.
Yeah, so Michael
stretched it a bit.
Michael D has stretched it well beyond what any of his predecessors had done. And so it's clear that a president who talks about policy there's no way of censoring them or censoring them. So they can say what they want. And so they can be awkward for a government of the day.
I mean, there
and
is
that
an
might
argument,
be part of the campaign then.
There is a constitutional discussion about whether or not the president is entitled to, depending on who they're talking to. If they're talking to the Oireachtas or if they're talking to a foreign parliament or, you know, representing the government or the country abroad, that they are circumscribed. But if, as I said, they're going to Machran na Foirme to make a speech, there's an argument says they can say what they like.
And they do. And so they can more or less, it is kind of open season now. And so it might be part of the campaign as to whether the presidency should be continue to be this kind of politicised role, or should it be something that goes back to what it was, a more symbolic role.
Can I ask you both about the nomination process? Mm. Is it too restrictive? I mean, should anybody be allowed if they're of the suitable age? And I don't think anyone really wants a 22-year-old president. Maybe they do.
But we voted against that. So.
It's 35 is the age limit. But besides that restriction, is trying to get on the ballot paper too restrictive, do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously the candidates who are struggling to get on the ballot paper at the moment would say that.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's two things I would just make on that. If someone's really determined to be president, there was two very important dates. Last May, we had, 12 months ago, we had a local election. So there was a new whole set of local councillors in. So you had 12 months from now to actually start talking to people and engaging with people.
Also, why not go for your council and give yourself some political credential, and then your own council at least would back you?
Yeah.
But clearly, people weren't thinking that far ahead.
Yeah. And then, of course, we all knew that the term of this president would come to an end in November. There would be a campaign.
Yeah, so there was no rollover possible.
There's no rollover possible. So I think Sean Gallagher made a point at the weekend somewhere that there are two more meetings most local authorities will have So anyone looking to influence a local authority, if they haven't been really there already, I mean, I remember listening, I was listening to something this morning where Sean Gallagher was talking to candidates as early as March or April, local councillors, in advance of a nomination for a post of member. So I think if people are deciding this weekend I'm going to run and I'm very unhappy that the councillors aren't behind me, that's kind of your own fault, to be honest with you.
Yeah, don't forget that Sean Gallagher the first time round had a Fianna Fáil colour to his candidacy. So if you're trying to get on the ballot paper, how problematic is that now for all of these new candidates?
It's harder, but I mean, if we say it's very restrictive, there were what, 6 or 7 candidates in the last presidential election.
4 out of 6, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not that hard. And it has to be a little hard. You know, it's the presidency of the country. And so I think it was designed for a reason, because to make it was deliberately restrictive. And so keeping somebody like Conor McGregor off the ballot paper, it's sort of it's working well, you could argue, because no council in their right mind is going to nominate him.
Yeah, so the only way he is by this legal challenge. What is the essence of that challenge?
I have no idea, because he's trying to allege that the constitution is unconstitutional. So there's no, I'm not quite sure. Yeah. Maybe his lawyer will out for a while.
There's one other thing as well. I mean, I think Owen made a point earlier, I think it's really important. We look at our president and go, could we be proud of this person? And we won't name names, but there are certain heads of states that we look and go, but for the grace of God, there go I. You know, and I know that, for example, the president of America has an executive function and our president doesn't. But there's a couple of things that just because you think you should be president, and you go around and ask enough people, and I think I should be president, that isn't a good enough reason to get your name on the ballot. The other thing is, and I think we did touch on the funding area as well, there is a limit on how much you can spend, 750,000. There's also a limit on how much you can claim back, which is 250,000. Now, that's been raised since the 2018 election, ironically enough, because of the cost of living index. Yeah. So it's gone up by 50,000.
But in order to get the money back, you have to get a quarter?
Quarter to quarter. So just to give you an example, the last presidential election, 2018, the quota was 736,000. So you would have to secure a quarter number of those votes to get your money back. Only two candidates did it the last time, our sitting president and Peter Casey.
And there are a lot of former candidates in presidential elections who ended up being broke, ended up having to remortgage their house because of a failed presidential campaign. So it's not cheap.
Is it transparent how it's counted, how much you've spent?
Yeah, I mean, well, as long as you're telling the truth to SIPO, you have to report what you have spent. But it probably shouldn't be a terribly expensive election because once you're on the ballot paper, all of the media is going to give you free coverage. And so, you know, Sean Gallagher didn't have posters when he ran in 2011 because he couldn't afford them. And he made a virtue out of that, but it didn't stop him from almost being elected. Yeah. And so you will get all the attention you need. You don't really need to spend that much money.
I think the key thing is if you're prepared to work hard, meet people, talk to people, and you get people believing you, people will put in the time and the hours and the shoe leather. They're not getting any money for it, but they'll believe in you and they'll do it. That's what you kind of need. And if you can't swing a campaign like that, you're not going to win an election in the long term.
It's extraordinary. They even credit Donald Trump with getting a huge proportion of his extra vote by simply the number of people he met. Yeah. You know, however briefly or peripherally he met them, standing for pictures.
Handshakes are powerful things. People remember you.
Exactly. How do you make people feel? I mean, Mary McAleese was brilliant at it. I mean, people, you know, some of her, I remember at the time, some of the other opponents were saying, you know, she's a bit standoffish, she's an academic. But when she worked the room, people remember. She remembered people's names. She engaged with people. And people were feeling, right, okay, I could trust this person to do the same on behalf of our country.
Okay. I presume that at this point, gender is not an issue at all.
No, I don't think it matters. You know,
having a woman president versus a man doesn't make any difference to anybody anymore.
No, I think it was of interest in 1990. Yeah. Now it's irrelevant.
Do you think age is relevant in this election? You know, the latest candidate to enter saying he wants to be the youngest president, because we vitally need for this generation a younger image?
I think that will probably be his narrative. That'll be the story that he tries to tell. And it could work if he's engaging, if he's somebody who's warm and sincere and comes across well, that might well work. And I suspect a lot of people might be kind of thinking, you know, we've got to get away from having old men in in the Áras, and so it could be the story that he tries to tell.
Here's a very interesting text. General consensus seems to be that our last three presidents have been excellent. Some minor criticism of Michael D in brackets. Are we so much better at electing presidents than TDs, or is it just that it's a cushy job that it's almost impossible to screw up?
Well, I think if you look at the candidates, that the people who became president, they were all experienced people of, you know, they all had done things in public life, either as politicians or academics. So they had something to stand on and fall back on. And it goes back to the point we're making earlier. Just because enough of my friends tell me I should be president is not a reason to run for president. And just because I have enough money to run for president shouldn't be a reason to run for president. It should be something you have to convince some of your political peers, county councillors or members of the Oireachtas, that I'm a worthy candidate, that I have things that I can bring and add to the office and dignity of the post of president.
Oh. I'm just wondering whether he was about to make an announcement there.
Can I make a prediction, says another. This is from Tony. There are so many disgruntled people out there. I think a protest vote is very much on the cards to keep the old guard out.
Yeah, so I mean, you could see with Peter Casey's strong vote, he got to about 20% of the vote. I think that was just a protest vote rather than necessarily being one for Peter Casey. He was a kind of a kick in the establishment, and Michael D. Higgins was clearly the establishment.
And finally, I should ask you both about Catherine Connolly. I mean, you know, crowdfunding and all of that, whether she ever reaches the 750,000 ceiling is another question. But the question of recognition for her, even though she's in Dáil Éireann and so on, there was a lot of Catherine who?
Yeah, she wouldn't be that. So people who kind of are politicos will know exactly who she is, but a lot of people just really won't know her. And so we can see she's already kind of working the system. She was at the FLA at the weekend, and we'll expect to see a lot of that.
The final question really is about that funding again, and you know, GoFundMe pages or whatever you might use. Can third parties just spend money for you without telling you?
Yes. There isn't a restriction on third parties doing it. Now, it could be problematic. So it's easy in referendums. And that's
like someone owns a truck that takes one of these big signs and they pay for the driver to drive around with this truck saying vote X or Y.
Yeah, I mean, you'd want it coordinated. Yeah, and so
issue in Pascal's constituency?
But if we can just go back a little further, the limit is 750,000. The most any candidate has spent in recent years was Gay Mitchell when he spent 527,000. And at the time it was €4.67 per vote. He didn't get his deposit back. So the amount of money you spend, it does not correlate with success.
A cautionary tale.
Indeed.
On that note, thank you both for coming in. Ona Malley, Professor of Politics at Dublin City University, and Barry McLaughlin, Head of Client Engagement at the Communications Clinic. Thank you both.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.